This is Tau Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. Today, we're talking to filmmaker Kiki Shakti. Her production work based in Taos spans between short films, music videos, and work done through Kiki Love Productions, her video production house. Before I say any more about Kiki, let's hear her introduction in her own words.
I call myself a filmmaker, a poet, an artist, a singer, a philosopher, because I do have a band too with Spanky. A philosopher, a rebel, a deviant, a comedian. I really want to do stand-up comedy, but I'm so scared. I've done it like once. A woman and a human being, but in reality, at the central core, in my essence of my being, I'm a conduit of love from the universe for all life on this planet and any other planet to which I may travel. Because you never know.
Kiki Shakti completed her Bachelor of Science degree from the Department of Radio, Television, Film at the University of Texas in Austin in 2003. Some of Kiki's projects include Coming Clean, a story of drug addiction told backwards in time, and Sasquatch on Skis and Been Caught Stealing Volumes 1 through 3, made for the Taos Bentley Super 8 Film Festival, of which Kiki was a managing partner from 2006 to 2009. Here's our conversation.
Well, at first, I wanted to be an actor when I was a little kid. But I'm too, like, shy and self-conscious, and I was never very good. At least I didn't think so. Maybe someone else would tell me different. Sometime in high school, I decided, like, that would be a fun thing to do, is to go to film school. And so then I went to the University of Texas Radio, TV, Film Department. They are a really good film school, mostly because they have excellent teachers. I had some really great professors and a lot of equipment that you have access to. You know, there's a lot of money, but they still, like, it's Texas football. And so, like, at one point there was my undergrad thesis, you had to take a class to get access to the Super 16 camera or whatever, you know, like mm-hmm. this particular Arriflex. And I was like all set. I was like, all right, I'm going to do this in the springtime. And then the lady, like, I talked to the dean and she was like, oh no, we can't afford to do that until the summer, because we just don't have the funding to fund that class and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I like burst into tears in the dean's office. It's yeah. like, but I have it all planned. Now I have to have another semester, you know. Yeah. I just want to graduate. But, and I was like, and the football team gets surf and turf and there's not enough money for this
and
class.
And anything they want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was a bit upset. But then, you know, my, that film, Golden Framboise, it won the award for best screenplay at the 2006 Cinema Texas Short Film Festival. And I was like, that's cool. It's pretty funny. There are some things, you know, that I'm like, eh. But I do really like it, Golden Framboise. It's like a glam trash space odyssey. I found a script that I wrote when I was like a freshman in high school, not too long ago. And I was like, man, I was pretty good at this even then.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's how I've kind of, I just wanted to, I have ideas for stories or scenes or mm-hmm. things that I'd like to share with an audience that I think are interesting. Mm-hmm. And I also, I kind of just think that you can like change the world with touching someone's heart. You can mm-hmm. change minds.
You've been making films for a long time. How many years?
A long time. I finished Golden Framboise. Technically, I graduated from film school in August of 2003, but right. I didn't actually finish the movie until April of 2004.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
And then shortly after that, I moved back to Taos because I grew up here. And I moved away right before high school. I went to elementary and junior high here. And so then I moved away right before high school and then went to UT. So then I came back.
So at least 10 years of being just working with the medium and probably even more than that.
Almost 20. Yeah.
What's something that now you understand that you didn't understand before?
What is something that now I understand that I didn't understand before?
Specifically
about filmmaking is that you can't give up on it, you know?
Yeah.
Like you have to, at some point you have to like kill your baby, right? But if you have a project that you want to see to fruition, you want your vision to be on a screen that you can see with your two eyes and you can put in front of a bunch of other eyeballs, mm-hmm. then it's like perseverance, you know?
Yeah.
You have to be patient and really work toward it. And you just because sometimes it seems like it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, great. I've put so much effort into this project. And then it's like, is it going to fall apart? And it's possible that it will. I mean, I've had that happen. But either you pick it up and take it further, or, you know, then it's just one of those that kind of has fallen by, which happens too. And keep trying, because the more you do, the better you get. Mm-hmm. And the better you get, the more you do. And it kind of snowballs, you know. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, first off, you don't ever stop learning unless till you're dead, hopefully, mm-hmm. you know. And then you can always continue to better yourself and your skills. And I don't know, I feel like an artist never really retires too. So sure, there's an element of your creative instincts, whether it's film or music or, mm-hmm. you know, the drawing or painting or any of it, cooking, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is that inspires you, like, and draws out that creativity. Hopefully you never lose that.
So I also know you do, in your filmmaking world, or that aspect of your life, you do purely artistic projects. You also do projects that you're getting hired for to make something. Yeah. And what I'm curious about is how you balance that, or what that balance is like, or is there a difference, or can you find the creativity in, you know, throughout, even if it's a job?
If it's a job, yeah, of course I can. I mean, that's why people hire me. Mm-hmm. It's for my creativity. It's for my ability to know what is possible, first of all, and what we can do, and like to try to get their vision for their project, you know, because I've done a huge variety of projects because, you know, we're in Taos and I'm like, I need some money. So, you know, I will do whatever project you want, basically.
Sure.
So long as you pay me properly, a decent wage, we're on it.
Yeah.
And this is going to cost this and la, la, la. Even like more like technical projects that maybe would seem boring to some people, or I don't know. I've never really had, actually, I don't think I've had too many boring projects. I think they're all, I put a lot of, you know, I want my client to be happy with the product, and I think they usually are pretty ecstatic. But it's anything from like working with kids and making PSAs. I mean, I've done that quite a bit, and they're good, you know.
Yeah.
And then I love making music videos, and I've done some live coverage performance, and then I take the big live coverage, or the, you know, the 50 minutes of the performance, and I cut it down to whatever five that they want, you know. Right. I've done that a few times.
So you find joy in all of it.
Twirl, yeah, for the yoga videos, for Shreve if they closed down during the pandemic. But yeah, so
there's joy there,
right? Yeah, and it's fun all the time, you know. Gosh, that the video that I made with Twirl last fall, or last like winter, for the unmasking event.
Yep.
I mean, I was like editing this video and it was making me cry like every time. I was working with Nina, and, you know, I'd send her a version of the edit, and she would have her commentary, but we'd both be just like, because it was so beautiful, I thought, you know, and I felt so happy to be getting to use my creative skills in a way that is going to bring in the whole community together, you know?
Yeah, I think is so neat. So this kind of leads a little bit into, and I'm going to read from this. I wrote this down, a little bit into what I'm going to term kind of a philosophical approach that you have, that I feel that you have. And this comes from various bios that I found online. It reads,
I probably need to edit some of
them. Well, I'm gonna paraphrase it. I didn't go word for word. I'm paraphrasing here. Kiki's world was filled with glitter, shimmer, rainbows, unicorns, and mermaids. Throughout her teenage angst, goth, punk phase, the glitter turned black and her darker sensibilities coagulated. This awareness, along with a great love for sci-fi and camp, have been the basis for her work in film. That's the end of it. I find this fascinating because when I read that, I understand it as you kind of being not only aware, but particular about what informs your artistic sensibilities.
Very much so, yeah. There are particular films that I don't necessarily want to, you know, replicate, but that have very much informed not just my artistic sensibilities with film, but sure. with music and the way I dress and the kind of, you know, interior design that I like all of it, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And all of it kind of changes and flows, but, you know, I mean, I can tell you right now, it's The Dark Crystal, The Neverending Story, The Princess Bride, a bunch of Tim Burton, like, you know, mm-hmm. Edward Scissorhands and Beetlejuice, The Legend, Ridley Scott, and Alien, all the Aliens movies.
Whoa. And so in terms for you, that visual, or I want to say visual catalog, but that is just kind of lodged in your mind from your coming up years and watching those things on screen.
Right. When I was a kid, those mm-hmm. are like all my favorite movies.
Yep.
And to this day, you know, I just, you know, who doesn't love like a fantastic adventure, like Legend, or, you know, there's unicorns and a goth princess. It's like, and Tim Curry is Lord Darkness, you know? Mm-hmm. Ridley Scott's got a great story about making that movie actually too, that I really like. And I've kind of held on to it in the back of my head for yeah. when things fall apart is they built this big set for the movie Legend with Tom Cruise and Mia mm-hmm. Sara, right? Mm-hmm. And Tim Curry as Lord Darkness. And there's this big scene that they're going to have, and they had like fire and this and that. It was like a fire swamp kind of scene or something like that. And it burnt down. The whole warehouse, the whole set burnt down, like whatever studio lot he was called to the lot. They're like, the set's on fire. He gets there and it's just like unsalvageable. Like there's no making that scene. They're going to have to make the movie without that scene because it's not happening. There's not going to be a set. And he's like, well, I guess I'll just go play tennis. Because, you know, for him,
yeah.
playing tennis was a way for him to, like, you know, release and, mm-hmm. and just, like, de-stress and this and that mm-hmm. and something that he enjoyed. Whereas for me, I like to swim laps.
Oh.
So I always kind of imagined, like, if I was Ridley Scott in that moment, I'd be like, I guess I'll just go swimming. You know? I mean, I like that story because it's like, yeah, you can't be attached to even this multi-million dollar set.
Yeah, and I thought I was having a bad day.
Right? Like,
mm-hmm. No, that's such a great story because I think it goes back to what you said at the beginning, this perseverance thing, like in terms of how we just get through life in general, it's really how you deal with those moments over time because they happen
Definitely.
Over time, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
And whether it's your own creative project or just personally in your life, and I feel like that's such a good story to remember. I'm now going to remember that story when anything in my life goes wrong.
Yeah.
Like, okay, let's go play tennis.
Yeah, because let's go play tennis.
Or swim laps.
Or whatever, yeah.
You are listening to TCA Radio Hour, and we're talking with Kiki Shakti, a filmmaker. More from Kiki when we come back. But first, let's listen to Puffy Eyes, a song from her band, The Ace of Spades.
Mexico, make our way to Rio, Argentina too.
like to say that I'm a conduit of love for all life on this planet and any other planet to which I may travel, because I just want to cover my sci-fi bases.
That was Kiki Shakti. You're listening to TCA Radio Hour, and I'm Chelsea. Kiki Shakti is a mentor, producer, director, and filmmaker in Taos. Her production work spans between short films, music videos, and all kinds of creations made through Kiki Love Productions, her video production house. Let's get back into the conversation.
My friend Genevieve and I came up with an acronym for the word love, which is liberation from oppression and violence everywhere. So liberation from oppression and violence everywhere is love. And on a real macro scale, you can kind of get, you know, it's like world peace or something, right? Or it's, you know, sure. You can just see how that could play out. Mm-hmm. But like liberation from oppression and violence everywhere includes the micro, the personal, the like the liberation of the oppression of your mind and the violence of your thoughts about yourself, you know? Like, mm-hmm. Don't believe everything you think, especially about yourself, you know? Because yeah. Oftentimes you're more critical than anyone else is going to be, and it's going to be really hurtful, mm-hmm. You know? So, yeah, I mean, just, and certainly we all need insight into ourselves so we don't get like too self-aggrandizing and on, you know, go in the opposite direction.
Sure.
But yes, yeah, certainly like loving yourself, you have to start with that first. And that is not easy, you know? I did a Pecha Kucha and I talked about, it was really a personal story, but I married myself in 2007. And it was because I had this joke that was like, I can't even really remember the punchline, but it was mm-hmm. like, I've been raised to like want to be the princess for the day and want to have the party in the dress. And I know what I want my wedding to look like. And I was like 26 or 27 at the time, 26. And I was like, I know what I want my wedding to look like, but I'm like up there alone, you know, in my mind's eye, because it's just, I have no vision of my partner at the time, you sure. know, and so maybe I should just marry myself. And my friend goes, why don't you? And I was like, oh, that would be cool. It was like life as performance art, or like totally. Adventures in narcissism or you know. But then it was also like, it became what it turned out to be. It was like a very real personal ceremony where I got up in front of a bunch of people on a Monday afternoon and I promised to love and cherish and honor myself till death do I part, in like kind of a big way. Mm-hmm. And so then after that, I went on a trip for a honeymoon. Why not? You know, I did the whole thing. Like yeah. It was fun. It was really fun. I had bridesmaids and bridesmen and it was like great. Everyone got dressed up. I wore red. My bridesmaids wore white. And then I went on a trip, and then I was coming home and I had all these ideas like, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then I had what I call chatterbox guy in, you know, he's in the back of your head, mm-hmm. chatterbox guy. He's a real jerk. And he tells you that you're ugly and you're fat and you're stupid and you're never going to be successful. And everything that you love is stupid, you know, like whatever he's telling you, right? Chatterbox guy can shut up. And I was driving home, I think, from Albuquerque or something. And I just like pulled over at like a rest stop because I was like, you know what? You just got up in front of all these people and promised to love and cherish yourself. And now you're going to talk to yourself like that? Like, mm-hmm. It really changed the way that I interact with myself in the world, you mm-hmm. know? And then, you know, like life isn't easy, you yeah. know? Mm-hmm. It's full of grief. Mm-hmm. And so each time you it's hard mm-hmm. and it's just trying to like, but then each time it's like, okay, I know how to do this a little better.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter if it's existential crisis based on a movie falling apart or friend or your family member passing away or getting your feelings hurt about, I don't know, at work or something, you know,
yeah.
like
yeah.
everyone has ways, things that really cut them, and it's how do we kind of hold ourselves in those moments,
and I think and that's
with love, you know, mm-hmm. that'll get you through it.
And I think that's really neat that moment really happened after the ceremony, after the honeymoon,
yeah,
after, and then you realize kind of really what what you've gotten yourself into.
Yeah,
in that way. And what's the really the meaning of what that is? And do you feel like even now over this time, it's kind of almost like a renew? You have to renew. You have to remember. You have to still kind of a process. Or
I celebrate my own anniversary to myself.
Yeah.
I mean, now I have a wonderful partner who I adore. Mm-hmm. Like it's not. It wasn't about like being alone or having like a multiple personality complex or anything like that. You know, it was just about being there for myself in the end. And it's funny too, because, you know, it goes along in the same vein as like, I would prefer to be known as being kind than nice, because kindness is always authentic and niceness can be faked. And kindness is not always nice, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you're going to be truly considerate of someone or of yourself, like sometimes you're not in the right, you know, and sometimes, and that doesn't feel good. It's with kindness and compassion and forgiveness, then you forgive yourself, or the person can forgive you, or however you work that out. Mm-hmm. But it's with kindness that usually that it gets resolved.
That's a nice distinction between those two words. Yeah, I'm like,
I get that from my mother. She's like, I hate the word nice.
Yeah, well.
I don't know, when I was working at the Towson at one point, one of my colleagues was like, hey, can you drop this ketchup at this table? And I was like, sure. You know, I was on my way doing whatever.
Yeah.
Going back over to the bar or getting limes. I'm not even sure. But I dropped this little ramekin of ketchup for this guy. And I was like, here you are. And the rest of your food is coming out. And sure, that was nice. And that's just how I would talk generally to any customer like that. Right. But like, he looked at me and he was so grateful for that ramekin of ketchup. Like, I had definitely made this guy's breakfast experience awesome. And I was like, it just brought me so much joy to like make this random stranger happy, you know? Mm-hmm. And for something so small.
Yeah. No, and it's so many times in the smallest, those small things, I feel like in all levels of life or work or whatever.
Yeah.
It seems to me, you know, that's where it lives, the kindness, in a way. I want to ask you about the radio. You are on the radio.
I am.
You DJ, you run two shows.
Yes.
And how did you come to radio?
First of all, I studied radio, TV, film. So I was interested in radio in college, too. And I would do some overnights at KVRX 91.7. The only slot that they had for me was like 3. It was like 2 in the morning until 5 or something. And I was like, oh, God. I'm not very good at doing this. It was like a graveyard shift. And I did that, you know, not too much. I was more involved in the film side of radio, TV, film. Mm-hmm. But it was fun, you know. And I remember actually in high school, too, I'd gone to that radio station and they had like some kind of high school, university, connect kind of deal where I got to like play around in the radio station then when I was like 15 or 16 or something like that. But then really I got into it when KNCE started, you know. They were like, hey, we need shows. And I was like, hey, what about Girls Just Want to Have Fun? And it could be a show about women making music. And I got super into it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think it's one of the longest running shows on, I mean, there's several, but.
Yeah, but it started at the beginning?
At the beginning of KNCE.
That's going to be
years.
In October.
Yeah. 7 years. And we're the New Mexico Broadcasting Association number one radio station in the state. I'm so stoked on that. And I don't think that we are broadcasting that enough. Hear that, Taos? We are the number one radio station in the state. That's awesome.
Well, here's a question. I talked to Howie last week. One of the things I asked him, though, is radio, in depending on your background and kind of what you came up in or what you're surrounded by in your family, but radio, in a way, is kind of defunct. People are on Spotify, people are on Google Play, people are choosing what they want to hear very specifically for themselves, not all people. Some folks don't even know how to tune their radio in their vehicles. So in that sense, for you, when you think about radio, what makes it relevant?
Oh gosh, I think it's important, first of all, for us to continue to have this medium just for safety's sake, honestly. Oh, you know, because like, radio still is pretty, you know, it's digital, but there's radio technology is different somehow. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure. I forgot. I studied it in college, but
I see what you're saying.
The science behind it, like it, we need it. I think that we need it. And also, you know, I love the radio. Like, you never know what'll come on. And like when I was a kid, before we had Spotify and all that, we're talking about the past, but when you would like wait until your favorite song came on and then you record it on the cassette, you know, and that's how you made your mixtapes or whatever, or you'd like record the radio. The reason I like KNCE is because you don't really have to scan, because it's like so diverse
and varied.
You know, you're gonna find all sorts, anything that tickles your fancy, you're gonna love it. You know, so what makes radio relevant, though? I just think that it's still a really important medium. It's, you know, I mean, like people on the job site, sure, they'll maybe listen to Pandora.
Sure.
But sometimes they'll listen to KNCE.
Yeah. They'll tune in to something in the air, wave that's happening at this moment.
Yeah. And and the way that you can tell story, like I love NPR.
Yeah.
I'm a huge NPR nerd. Today, even, I was like, I love Steve Inskeep. I'm such a nerd, but he made me laugh so hard. But he's so great. And I just imagine like hearing the NPR host and at the farmer's market and being like, are you Steve Inskeep? You know, or whatever, whoever,
sure.
Mara Liasson. It's also for more like local communities, you know, I mean, that's really, it's like the problem with like, for instance, social media and the internet is that a lot of the local papers are like around the nation are going out of business.
Right.
And local news companies are being, you know, bought up by conglomerates like Sinclair Media and stuff like that. And so it's important to have a local media where you can get your news and you can get your goings on and you can get information that you may not be able to get from like the New York Times Daily podcast.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. Something just like you said, localized. So I think part of what you do also is working with youth, not only youth maybe, but you teach.
I've been a video mentor.
Yeah. Tell me what that's like for you, being a mentor.
The best thing about it is, for instance, I was working with the CORE, the Youth Outreach after school program at the Pueblo, and we made some PSAs, and our first shoot, like the first day of shooting, we scheduled all of our shoots to take place Thanksgiving weekend because we had like some time, you know, big chunks of time. And so we're like, okay, we wrote the scripts and this and that. And then we were like, okay, we're going to shoot. And we're shooting this anti-suicide PSA. It was pretty heavy duty, but it was so good. It was so well done. And this girl, Heaven, she goes, I want to do this as a living, like for a living. And I was like, girl, you can. And let me tell you, how old are you? You're 15. Okay. When you go, you can go to the, you know, just UNM Taos has a great digital media arts program, you know, like you can learn so much. And it's just so rewarding, that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like this road or path or this area exists.
Yeah.
And yes, you can do it. You can participate. You can have it. This is yours, kind of thing.
Totally.
The seasons are changing. We're going into the fall. We're going into the last part of this year. And I'm curious, what do you feel good about, hopeful about?
I have a bunch of projects coming up.
Like what?
I can't really talk about it.
Okay.
But I can't give you details, but I'm on the verge of signing a contract to an option agreement to adapt these novels into hopefully a TV pilot.
Cool.
And I'm really excited about that project because it's super cool and it's funny and it's weird and I like it. It's very campy and interesting and kind of has elements of sci-fi, but, you know, lots of like, and as soon as we sign the contract, then I will tell you all about it.
Okay.
I'll be blaring it on all systems.
Cool.
But then I am also just started, working as a producer on a documentary about art, the history of like the Santa Fe art colony.
Oh, interesting.
It's really interesting.
Cool.
So I'm stoked on that. I just had a meeting about that. I also have the feature film that I wrote at the artist residency in La Mancha, the mm-hmm. Flatlands Artist Residency. Mm-hmm. It's called Time Stretchers. I don't know. It's happening.
Cool.
So, I mean, it's getting worked on. Yeah. And that's fun too.
Yeah. So no, that's yeah. good. You have a lot of, a few things yeah. kind of looking ahead. And, yeah.
And I'm also actually looking, so I've only done my video business word of mouth. Like I've never advertised, yeah. which is crazy because I've been doing this. I've had Kiki Love Productions open mm-hmm. in Taos since January of 2015. Uh-huh. And I've never advertised. So I'm really excited about to start advertising.
Got it. Yeah.
And just get I'm like, oh, it's there. Time to expand and get a little bigger and actually start advertising. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, I know that sounds like a weirdly, like, I don't know. I feel like it's like a step that should have been already.
Like at the beginning. But no, but that makes yeah. sense. And kind of like what you said, looking at it, like, okay, I'm ready to get this like outside of, let's say, maybe just your own circles or yeah. circles of circles, but really exactly. like get stuff out there that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's neat.
No, I'm super stoked on that.
Okay. So. Well, thank you so much. I feel uplifted from talking to you, so I appreciate it. And mm-hmm. thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank yeah. you for having me. I appreciate being included in the conversation.
Thank you. That was Kiki Shakti sharing thoughts on projects and reflections in a conversation we had a couple weeks ago. Find out more about Kiki Love Productions online. And if you want to tune in to her own radio show, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, it's on Tuesdays at 10 p.m. here on KNCE 93.5. You're listening to TCA Radio Hour. When we come back, Enriqueta Vasquez reads from her latest book, Cuentos and Poetry. Stay tuned to listen to a story filled with friends and piñón picking. First, let's take a break with All of Nothing from the Ace of Spades. TCA Radio Hour, I'm Chelsea. Earlier this year, Enriqueta Vasquez, a New Mexican political activist and writer, published her latest book, Cuentos and Poetry, which includes stories that weave together actual events and folklore to take her readers on a journey through Southwest culture and traditions. In 1966, Vasquez moved to San Cristobal, New Mexico, to help run the Vincent Ranch. During this time, she wrote the column Despierten Hermanos for El Grito del Norte newspaper from 1968 to 1972. The newspaper covered many notable events concerning the Chicano movement in New Mexico, and Vasquez's writings address issues of racism, poverty, sexism, human rights, and power structures. Other works by Vasquez include the books Enriqueta Vasquez, The Chicano Movement, Writings from El Grito del Norte, published in 2006, and The Women of La Raza, An Epic History of Chicana Mexican-American Peoples, published in 2016. Right now, we listen to Vasquez read from her most recent book, Cuentos and Poetry. Here's a story from Chapter 1, a story born in this time of the year when days grow shorter and nights colder. The Fall.
My neighbor, Miguel and Elena, had heard that there was a lot of piñón. They invited me to join them. Elena's mother and sister came over to stay the night before so that we would all leave at 6:30 in the morning. We prepared beans, big lunch, threw in the blankets for the morning chill, took out our cartones to heat nylon and pans to cook hamburgers, chili, and plenty of water, soft drink, and beer. Everyone took a nice bag or a pillowcase for their piñón. We were all set to drive off when Larry, who everybody calls it Lore, and Anna drove into the yard and got caught in the excitement of it all. They jumped in the pickup to join us, and away we went. These two are great fun. Even when they're fighting, which is almost all the time, they never hurt each other, but oh, they fight really clever, like saying, "Dime, yo te diré." Tell me and I will tell you better. Anyway, we made room for Nore and Nana and a very large, very real big crowded into Miguel's pickup, and away we went to El Monte. We already knew of a place of the main road, about 8 miles. Some of us had been out there scouting for piñón blossom even since spring and knew it would yield a big crop. The area closer to the main road was already busy with piñón pickers, and you could even smell the fresh coffee brewing in camping stoves. Word had gotten around fast, so we waved to everybody as we drove further into the monte. Soon we came near the Forest Service fence, which fences Mrs. Jones's land. The beauty of picking piñón is that the Carson National Forest is public land and free for all. But now, newcomers have moved in, built big, fabulous homes, and lay claim to as much of the forest as they can get away with while closing off some of the public access roads to keep out old-timers and families. Families generally use these roads for wood gathering, and newcomers claim they own it, but people know better. Oh, well, what to do? There have been lawsuits by Los de Dinero, who claim private ownership of access roads and put all kinds of signs. Private property, do not enter. Violators will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law and so forth. Anyway, it seems that the judges in this case were blinders like Lady Justice and went along with that, even though an international treaty and traditional law said different and people know better. Imagine claiming thousands of acres as your private backyard. Oh, well, that's another story. But it is part of the storytelling that goes with picking piñón so that the people do not forget. Anyway, on this wonderful day, we're driving to Tres Piedras Monte on the National Forest. Mrs. Jones had hired riders who dressed like real live cowboys and all, guns and all, to patrol the fence along the monte during piñón season. These riders love reliving the cowboy and Indian era as they ride along the forest land side, telling people to stay out of the fence property, sort of daring us to go in. Talk about pins. But this would not be a day for a consternation of any kind. We just nod, wave, and smile. We know the law, too, and we set about our pleasure, pretending we didn't hear them. Don't speak the English, we'd say. But after they rode off, it did give us an idea, like kids, you know. If you ask them not to do something, it's very likely that's exactly what they will do. We figured that since they had so much land, hundreds of acres, and a fenced area to guard, that they would not ride by here again for a while. By now, pickings were going gung-ho, and there was piñón everywhere, so we just naturally moved closer and closer to the fence. Then we looked over the fence, we noticed bunches of big, big piñón trees. The piñón seemed bigger on the side of Doña Jones's fence. De veras que sí. Knowing this to be a fact, Miguel went over to take a look. Called us and we all went to see. Sure enough, it was true. They were big and there were lots and lots of little piñón nuts there. So pretty, so big, undisturbed for picking. These trees had probably never been picked and so they were plentiful. Well, we decided to take the chance. After all, the riders had already been through. It seemed unlikely that they would return anytime soon. They had a lot of land to cover, plus we could not let these beauties go unpicked. They would just rot to waste. So everybody helped everybody else cross the forbidden barbed wire fence. Andale, andale, the piñón seems to be beckoning. Everybody got across except Anna. Poor thing. She is well not plump, but truly quite large, like fat. Anna is a wonderful person, but she is huge and to be pitied. Projita. She wanted to get to over the fence, but she tore her pants and left part of her blouse trying to get over the fence. She couldn't make it across. Elore came over to help her, but all to no avail. Anyway, almost crying, she stayed on the Carson side as the rest of us crossed over to Mrs. Jones' land. You go ahead. I'll pick over here in the forest side, she said, and that way I can watch for the cowboy patrol. Anna said, well, actually, that made good sense. So we started picking. Híjole, qué piñón. It was big, big ones. Some of us ate them raw. Our mouths were savoring these tasty and small nuts. We were happy, happy piñón pickers, singing away, laughing and joking. Suddenly, a little ball of fur came over, wagging its tail and running to join us. At first, we thought to be a squirrel, but no, it was a dog, a fluffy white ball of fuzz that wore a pink ribbon and a diamond color. But the smell, phew! Actually, we smelled the perfume before we even saw the creature. In the pure forest air, so early in the morning, who could not know a smell that invaded the natural wilderness? Anyway, now on alert, we scurried off across the fence to the National Forest side. Shortly thereafter, a sweet little shriveled-up lady appeared walking with a cane, just enjoying every bit of her property. How she got so far from her house, we didn't know. But yes, sirree, Mrs. Jones had arrived. Well, it's a good thing Lori had joined us. Lori had a notoriously bullshitting fame that included going piñón picking and never getting on his knees to pick a single one nut himself. He just goes around making that conversation, joking, building a little fire to keep himself warm, and at lunchtime cleaning a spot to cook and prepare hamburgers and all the makings. Every so often, when we're picking, you could hear him call Anna, "Come on over here, honey. This is a good tree. And let me shake that limb for you, honey." Honey. Everybody knew Elore to be good-natured, though. If you needed help shaking a tree limb, you called on Elore, and he would help. Anyway, Elore crossed the fence, put on his best Elore smile, walked over to Mrs. Jones, and practically singing said, "Good morning, Mama. Out for your morning walk in this beautiful day." She smiled as he put his arm around her shoulder. "And yes, it is a beautiful day," she answered as she looked at us in our hands and knees on the forest side of the fence. We stopped long enough to smile and wave good morning, but kept on with our piñón picking on the forest side. We were on a roll and we weren't about to stop. We figured, this is it. If we gotta go, we are gonna pick plenty. As it turned out, Mrs. Jones was rather nice. Oh, como gente. So Lore kept talking with her, and who knows what he said. But pretty soon that little lady could be heard laughing and giggling like a teenager. And Lore, well, for once, we were glad that he could be such a bull and a gentleman at one time. All in all, it turned out okay. Mrs. Jones seemed happy and told us we could pick piñón on her side of the fence, just so long as you don't leave any trash around. We assured her we would never desecrate our own forest that way. After all, we were born and lived here as long as we had harvested its products. And Lore chimed in, "Don't you worry, honey. We only want to pick a few piñón nuts for the kiddies for Christmas and New Year's, you know." As we picked on, wearing our angelic halos, little did she know that we spoke to some pro piñón pickers, real committed piñón fever carriers. But then, I think that is culture and costumbre because Mrs. Jones said she never picked piñón. Imagine living here with your forest of private piñón trees and never picking piñón. It would be almost criminal to ignore and step on this wonderful food without tasting it. Oh, well, bueno, sea como sea, we will be picking piñón hasta la muerte. But for now, we were nice about it and offered Mrs. Jones some of ours, to which she said, "Oh, no, thanks," making us very happy enough not to share our piñón with her. After Elore said goodbye and the little lady and dog left, We all crossed the fence and picked it to our little heart's content, thinking we better make it good while it lasted. After all, those cowboys of hers would not be as kind, and they wouldn't let Lode put his arm around them. When lunchtime came, we all took a break and went for the food and water and drinks from the pickup. Lode already had a fire going. Another thing, we were always very careful to carry a shovel to make sure to put the fires out. We put hamburgers to cook, warm tortillas in the ashes, while we opened a jar of chili salsa and passed the refreshments around. The time for singing, laughing, relaxing, and telling the jokes had arrived, and everybody had a joke to tell as the afternoon's sun began to set. A top joke being Anna tearing her pants and leaving half her blouse hanging on the fence. The little mutt, Doña Jones, and Elore. Anyway, we just laughed. After we finished, everyone cleaned up the area and put the trash in a bag. As we climbed on our pickup, Lode yelled, Ana, se te ve el nargatorio, where you tore your pants. Oh, well, I'll just put my sweater and cover myself, she said. And everyone went to Teles in Arroyondo after picking piñón. And torn pants and blouse would not stop us. Everybody knew everybody else. People were already at Teles parking lot, hugging and kissing and gathering in a bolita around the trucks, sharing stories with all the other piñón pickers. As we left, we went inside, got a booth, and the men drank beer while some of us drank pop and ordered potato chips and hamburgers. Again, this being a real good picking day, everybody told everybody how much they had picked and how big it was. At Teles, everybody enjoyed the music. Y así, empolvados and dusty and dirty, some people danced and ate more hamburgers and potato chips, just enjoying each other's company. As we sat, Lourdes struck up a conversation with Chano. Everybody knew that Chano loved to talk and brag, like Lourdes. So after a little bit, Chano realized that he had met his match, and he began to brag about who had the most money. Lore always claimed that he had come from a very well-to-do family and that he never knew that poverty existed or whatever it was like, this being the reason he never picked piñón. Of course, we all knew every now and then. We all heard that every now and then. It sounded good, but these two were talking serious business. It kind of looked like there would be some action. Lore took out his checkbook and said, look, I have a checkbook and look at the money I have. Chano, not to be outdone, took out his checkbook and said, look at mine, and I can write you a check for any amount. Tell me how much to make it for. Lore searched in his pockets and another checkbook. I have another checkbook too. To which Chano started digging in his pocket and said, huh, look, hasta tengo food stamps aquí. Pulling out his book of food stamps. Frustrated, Lourdes showed him his watch band. Pure turquoise and silver, the best. ¿Y qué? Dijo Chano, unbuckling his pants. See this buckle? Gold. Better. Chano pulled off his belt to show Lourdes, who by now turned all shades of red. Before we knew it, Lourdes started swinging and Chano began swinging back, almost dropping his pants. We pretty much decided it was time to go. Miguel took Lode by the arm and everybody helped put him in the back of the truck. Naturally, he did not want to go, but we jumped on him and held him down while Anna, torn pants and all, sat on top of him. Meanwhile, some of the drinking buddies held Chano back to give everybody a chance to drive away. Chano got away from the gang and ran after the truck, trying to catch up with Lode, cussing and yelling with his fist in the air. Holding his pants up with his other hand, he ran after the truck for a good distance as Lore, not to be outdone, kept yelling and screaming, Suéltenme, let me go at him, at which we all held him down even harder. And so we were off for home, in complete happiness, with our piñón in a place where piñón thrives in the mountains, alive and well, que suave y que sabroso.
That was Enriqueta Vasquez reading from her book Cuentos and Poetry. TCA Radio Hour, supported by this station, KNCE 93.5 FM, streaming at truetausradio.com and our local business partner, Lamberts of Taos. We'll be here next Monday at 9 a.m. Playing now is a song from the Ace of Spades album, Existential Shotgun. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Right. If you go my way, you might fight a slight.